horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back and about 5 minutes to the top of the hour, and bring around Nick Tamaro joins us now. Nick.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Good. Good, good. Flying by, actually, this morning. And, you know, we're actually going over some of the same ground when it comes to the weekend, Oaklawn and Gulfstream. You know, the major focus, obviously, with the Fountain of Youth and all the supporting stakes. Mike Welch will join us next to kind of waltz through, you know, some of the other options at Gulfstream. We do have, though, the cross-country pick five, which gets a couple of the aqueduct races involved with the three Oaklawn events. And I also thought, and maybe we'll start actually with you, with Sam Houston, and had Chris Griffin on yesterday. We talked about last night's carryover, and or actually the carryover that started with the first six races, and then the second set of six produced another carryover for tonight. But tomorrow's card with the stakes, fun. I mean, there's going to be some tough to beat favorites, but any thoughts in there about some options?
Yeah, I think a couple of the races could end up being really competitive. There are definitely going to be some short-priced favorites that'll take a lot of beating, no question about it. I mean, we've seen these divisions kind of play out over time, especially the older horses on the turf. But I'll tell you, the older females on the turf that'll battle in the Miss Bluebonnet have there's a lot of contention in there. There's a number of horses I think are capable of winning. I actually thought there were a couple of potential prices that you might want to throw in, including G.C. Sparkles, who's two turf races for Danny Pish last summer, I think are better than they look on paper. And I think that was, you know, that was early in her career. She was just a late season three-year-old. Now she's four, coming back off a bit of a layoff, or I'm sorry, going second off a layoff after not showing a whole heck of a lot last time. But that felt like a race that maybe was designed for fitness. So I thought she was maybe an interesting contender. Miss Perfecta is in Texas now for the first time. This is a Texas bred that spent the majority of her career around the Midwest and then in Arizona for Jose Silva Jr. Obviously fits with these like a glove based on her prior turf races. So I thought she was interesting as well. And those two seemed like the fresh faces to go along with the likes of I'm a Discreet Lady and Herb's Love. She's Our Fastest and Cor Luna, who we've seen run against each other quite a few times already. I would say Cor Luna is probably the best of that lot. I made her the morning line favorite, and she's a horse who's competed well against state breds on numerous occasions. That felt like the most competitive race. The male half of that, which goes as the Houston Turf, the ninth, it seems to me, even though they've been battling for quite a while, Sunlit Song and Redditory, that Sunlit Song has kind of gotten the upper hand. And I don't know if Redditory, maybe he's getting a little long in the tooth. They're each 6 years old. It's kind of amazing that two of these really accomplished open company caliber Texas bred turf horses were born in the same year. And but it seems like Sunlit Song has just gotten to be a little bit better. It's going to be fun to see them do battle again. I think you could see either of them being upset potentially by Kenai Bob if he ends up running here. He's also entered in the H-Town, where I think he fits a little bit better. But, you know, it's good to see that a horse like Sunlit Song, who's competed well against open company and Direct Dial, who's going to be a big favorite in the H-Town. These horses have been competitive in all levels, and it's been a long road for Texas breds, but it certainly looks like the best days are still ahead.
I asked Brett Calhoun yesterday about he's a suitor who's cross-entered as well in the H-Town and in the turf, and Brett said he's kind of on the fence waiting to see what happens weather-wise and if that race, you know, potentially comes off. Obviously, if that happens, he'll run. He's a suitor, you know, in an off the turf setting. But I thought he's a suitor was interesting in either spot.
Yeah, I think he's a contender in both spots. I think he fits a little bit better on the dirt, in my opinion. I think the turf is going to be firm, so I would envision that Calhoun will end up probably running him on the dirt. I thought that maybe he might want to take advantage of a race being taken off the turf, but it's our weather is very, very different than it was a week ago. It's been 80 degrees every day, and so that turf has definitely firmed up quite a bit. So it's a little different environment. and that's supposed to be in the high 70s today and tomorrow, and I think the chance of rain went down. So I think he's a suitor as dangerous in both. I think he's a little bit better fit on the dirt. So we'll see. I think that's where he'll end up. I guess the one of the stakes we didn't touch on was the 2 3-year-old races are basically carbon copies of the prep races that were run last month, and it looks as if the winners of both of those races respectively should be very, very tough. That Star of the North in the 6th and I forget what the race is called, but the 2 Altozano. She's going to be a very, very heavy favorite. Comes in off that victory in the Texas Stallion event. Interesting, of course, because she's a Minnesota bred, but being by the Hunk, who's a registered Texas Stallion, she's able to go in here. Looks like she'll control that race from the start. I think same situation with Carbon Striker in the 10th. I think he's probably just a little bit better than these horses. I would say he's more vulnerable in the Jim's Orbit than Star of the North is earlier. That mainly has to do with the fact that he has the rail now. He doesn't have the run of the race on the outside. He's going to be under the gun a little bit more. And, you know, you kind of go from the hunter to the hunted in this scenario. And that might be a situation where you might want to take maybe a slightly critical approach of him and use a couple of alternatives like Stone Cafe and Senior Bye Bye and some of your multi-race bets.
There was... who was it? It was Island Sun that Chris liked yesterday when we talked. And there was somebody that caught my eye. You know, one of the things, that, as you mentioned, you know, the horses coming from out of town. And one of the things I liked about he's a suitor, you know, coming out of a good performance against Open Company and then, you know, getting into the restricted. And, in fact, Chris... added a corollary to that, which was Good Scout's performance on Wednesday, you know, winning. And that's one thing when in these races that is a little bit of an added, you know, when you're trying to, you know, make a decision on a horse, when you see ones that, you know, that ran well against Open coming back against the restriction, that's to me invariably a little thumb on the scale.
Especially now that the Open Company races have become as competitive as they are, right? I mean, there was a period of time where the Open Company was not exactly very strong, and sometimes those class lines blur a little bit, especially the cheaper you get. But yeah, now that you're talking about reasonable money in the purses for Open Company races, it's a completely different ballgame. It's still amazing looking at these races and next week seeing $44,000 purses for races of any type at Sam Houston. It's been a long way, but it's good to see. And then these races, I think in general, came up competitive enough to show you that the Texas breds are a product. They offer a product that still has some appeal.
Sam Houston Race Park got tonight's action, and then back with the Texas preview card tomorrow. Let's turn our attention to some cross country action and. You know, I had it on the desk all week, Nick, last week's results, and there were a couple of things that
the NIRA website did not have last week's result listed, the payoff listed, and I'm trying to think what it was. I can look it up as well.
It was
of course the sequence that I made seem relatively simple on Friday morning, and then it ended up being anything but.
Well, there something happened in there that made it a little bit. A little irksome. Personally, I left the George Weaver Firster off.
Well, that was difficult, right?
And the worst part about that, I you know, not to belabor this, but I found that Sano Grotto, the 2-horse, who was also, you know, a beneficiary of the meltdown, and if the Weaver doesn't come marauding, Sano Grotto would have been a lovely hit because would have run the table on the pick 5, and that was Saturday's anguish, frankly. But then there was the winner at Tampa, the winner of the horse that beat Malius and Irish Major.
Kaleidoscope Kid.
holy cow, as was described by by Grunder, Kalidioscope kid.
Oh, geez.
That horse hadn't won in, I believe, 2 years, and had been competitive. I mean, on figures was not impossible. But when you're building these multi-race tickets, you look at that race and Malios and Irish Major were A's. Ethan Hunt maybe a B minus or a C plus. To get to that horse, you've got to have a $300-$400 ticket. I'm sorry, and I even though the horse took some money, that was not a horse that you readily include on your multis.
Yeah, I mean, the only way you're going to be able to do that to me with success, to include a horse like that, and I did mention when we talked on Friday that he was a little bit pace compromised in his prior start. He was had improving prior speed figures. But again, I mean, this is a horse that you were only going to get if you were reaching 3, 4, 5 deep. And in order to do that, you were definitely singling Eloquent Speaker, and you were probably coming close to using Himmelstein and one other in the other Tampa leg. So, I mean, there was going to be a spot where you had to really narrow it down. And I think with these sequences where you're mixing together multiple tracks, I think that's the key, is that when you see an opportunity to, I'll say I've hit the Tronic 5 probably 3 times the whole time. I've played it maybe 10 times. And I feel like every time I've hit it, I've had a single. And it's not because I'm seeking one out, but because it just gives you, especially at a dollar price point, it gives you so much more flexibility in a situation like this, where if you were bullish enough on Eloquent Speaker, which we talked on Friday morning about how it looked like mm-hmm. she kind of towered over the field, new to the barn of Tony Dutrow, that it gave you that little bit of flexibility to maybe go to a fourth horse like Kaleidoscope Kid and be able to include the George Weaver Firster, who I thought getting all of these horses on the same ticket was really difficult. Hats off to anybody who did. It only paid $1,263 because Make Mischief, Himmelstein, and the other short priced winner, Eloquent Speaker, were all relatively short prices, but it was tricky.
Well, let's see if we can't unlock this sequence tomorrow.
It starts at Aqueduct in the 7th, which is about as big a grab bag as you're going to find anywhere in the country, an 8-horse field where 7 have not started before. David Aragona probably astutely made our man Mike favorite. He's the only experienced runner in the field for Horacio De Paz, first-time Lasix off a layoff. This is a horse who was competitive against New York Bred Allowance or New York Bred State Company at Finger Lakes on a couple of occasions. So, I mean, he's clearly the horse to beat. And I think he actually is the second choice on the morning line. The favorite is Dr. Ardito, who's a son of Liam's Map. Liam's Map progeny went on debut at a 9% clip. This is a very modest pedigree. There is not a lot on the dam side at all. The dam was a 2-time winner. She earned 38,000. She dropped one foal to race that won one time. Was just a 2-year-old winner. So there's really not a lot of pedigree power there. The pedigree that is interesting is Viking Zim, who is by Mishawish, whose progeny win at a 20% clip on debut. The dam was a winner. She's dropped 3 winners. 2 of them were stakes placed. 1 was a stake winner. This horse worked 21-2 at the sale. Interestingly, and since that 2019 meet at Saratoga where Jeremiah Englehart won with a number of 2-year-old first-time starters, he's 0 for his last 12 with 2 and 3-year-old first-time starters on the dirt at Naira. He has 4 wins in that category over the last year. 3 of them were at Finger Lakes and 1 was at Laurel. So that's the only negative I would say with Viking Zim, but pedigree-wise, he looks like the one who's the most interesting to me. I would probably use Vincent as well on the outside. Ray Handel's a guy who never won with first-time starters. We've seen him do a little bit better with them this year. He had a couple of wins at Saratoga. The dam here was a 4-time winner. The second dam was the really quick so-and-so, who Tom Bush trained. She made 5 starts, won her first 2, got buyers in the high 80s in her first 2 starts. There's a little bit of precocity there in that pedigree. But I think all in all, you're going to use our man Mike. I'm going to use Viking Zim as well and just try and get through it, because the other leg that you have at Aqueduct, and then we can switch over to Oaklawn, is another really tough maiden race where you got a bunch of first-time starters. And Robert Valeri has given Laura's Bellamy on the inside to Todd Pletcher. This was obviously a major client of Gary Gullo's over the years. This filly is a homebred. Her dam was a 2-time turf winner. We all remember Laura Condisco. She dropped 1 winner so far, Posse Condisco. It's hard to believe this horse is going to have a lot of ability. I mean, she certainly could, but the rail is a negative. And the other first-time starters in here are kind of a rough-looking bunch. I'm not exactly sure what to make of it. I think a lot of people are going to gravitate towards Sport Model on the outside because we saw how well Christophe Clement did with first-time starters in 2020. This is a big-time turf pedigree. This is not really one geared towards the dirt at all. Daughter of Freud, the dam was all turf. She's dropped three foals. Only one was a winner. As far as experienced horses go, I'm interested in Know It All Red. I'm not a big fan of this rider at all, but I think the cutback is interesting. I like the blinkers going on and getting Lasix. I think there's enough going on there that you can kind of latch on to, and I think she's going to be a big enough price. So I had virtually no clue. That'll come into focus a little bit more for me. Blame It On Mary in many ways is the horse to beat. She's got the best running lines, but this thing was awfully difficult to narrow down.
I hear you, and the placement of two, you know, maiden specials in the, you know, on the card and in this, you know, in this sequence was kind of you know, little eyebrow raising. Any interest in Jimmy Bond bringing back the first time 3-year-old Tassie?
I guess it's a good sign that he's willing to run her for in a maiden special weight race again. Especially being that he owns her and he could easily run her for a tag. She didn't have a clean trip at all on debut. She took no money, but that was, again, a relatively decent-sized field. It was on the slop. So, yeah, she's deserving of a shot on a dry track. Jimmy Bond's barn obviously goes in waves, and lately we've seen him do a little bit better. So I think you're probably foolish to exclude her, but I feel like I could say that about probably 6 or 8 of them.
Yeah, and then that Electric Youth with Kimmel, and you know Kimmel's funny. He can win with a firster, and I don't know, Dialed In is an okay. He gets the 10% in terms of first out success. That there is a sibling, that Stay Thirsty, Thirsty Gal. She was okay. She won 6 times. A little bit of maybe a hint of a pedigree. Kimmel a little better second out. Yeah, this is a bit of a mystery. And you know, we should mention, Nick, just because it's fun, because you brought up David Aragona. David had that tweet the other day when he made the line for Saturday. I guess this was yesterday. He tweeted that for the first time in his tenure as a morning line maker in New York, he had to make a 5-1 favorite in that 8th race, the $8,000 claimer, where it is kind of eye-crossing. And I'm curious what you're doing in there. I thought Gary could win right back with Win With Pride.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody will hit the pick five as many times as they did with Win With Pride last time. I do think he's a contender. I mean, I only have eyes for Frankie Barone in here. And that has to do with the fact that Frankie Barone has been victimized by being on the wrong part of the racetrack, coupled with some less than ideal trips in his last few starts. Back on the weekend, Valentine's Day weekend, so they raced on the 13th, 14th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. The inside was great, and we saw one performance after another. There was actually an article written about this, and I spoke to Ron Flatter about it, and we talked about the inside, and it was very informative. There's somebody interviewed in it that's sort of a denier, and it's like a biased denier. I didn't really understand if the person had watched the races, but it was a big inside. Frankie Barone was 3-4 wide the entire way. That was also a better field than this, because these are $8,000 claimers, right? Those were 10s. Hammer and Hammer's a former stakes horse. Mr. Short and Simple also has some ability. Bluegrass Cat Smile, as we know from a year ago and beyond, was a stakes caliber horse for a period of time. There are none of those like this in here. So I really like Frankie Barone. Otherwise it is a quite the grab bag. Playwright looks like a contender. I wouldn't be surprised if Win With Pride runs a decent race. It's a huge field. There's actually not a ton of speed in it. So I